we are a household for generations and we exist for the generations. Like, I'm not just raising you up to launch you out and be an independent person. You are a part of the family. And like, it's not that one day you're going to have a family. Like, you are a part of a family and you're going to get married and that's just going to be a bigger part of the family.
Hey, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jennifer.
And we're the hosts of the Marriage After God podcast. Our desire is to help you cultivate a marriage that chases boldly after God's will for your life together.
We want to invite you to subscribe to our show wherever you watch or listen.
We are so glad you're here, and we pray that our discussion truly blesses you and your marriage.
Welcome to the Marriage After God podcast.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Marriage After God podcast. I'm your host, Aaron Smith. If you've been loving how we're encouraging and equipping Christian couples, please hit that like button. Make sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode and leave a quick review on your favorite platform, wherever you watch or listen. It really helps spread the word. And the best way to spread the word is to tell everyone you know with your own mouth. Let them know about your favorite podcast. If you want to support this podcast, head to shop.marriageaftergod.com and grab one of our 31-day marriage prayer journals or our 30-day devotionals for marriage. They're game changers for your daily walk together. Today, I'm thrilled to chat with Jay Holland, a family and student pastor with over 25 years of experience, husband to Emily for 18 years, and dad to four kids, three biological and one adopted. Jay hosts the Let's Parent on Purpose podcast and the Daily Guided by Faith podcast to equip families to live on mission for Jesus with resources like his Fun Family Conversations ebook and Marriage on Mission tool. We'll dive into his how parents can guide teens toward godly manhood and womanhood, combating anxiety and identity struggles in a digital age, and how to serve Christ as a family unit. So enjoy my conversation with Jay Holland. Hey, Jay, welcome to the Marriage After God podcast. It was awesome to be on your podcast a handful of months back. And when we were done talking, we were like, hey, let's get you on our show. And here we are. Welcome to the Marriage After God podcast.
It's an honor to be here. Yeah, it was a lot of fun having you, and it's fun being on this side. I don't do a lot of these, so it's really an enjoyment when I get to be. I do a lot of podcasts. I just don't get to be on this side, so I'm enjoying it.
Well, you're a good communicator, so I feel like it's going to be a great conversation. I loved how you did your podcast, very conversational. It's how I like to do mine. So I hope we just have fun with this, and my ultimate prayer is always is that our listeners are just blessed by this, encouraged by this, challenged by this, and as you prayed before we started, convicted by some of this maybe. So why don't we start off with who you are, sure. How long you've been married, what you do, so my audience can get to know you a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm a follower of Jesus. I'm approaching 50 at this point. I'm in my late 40s now. I think at 48, you're officially in your late 40s. It's no longer mid.
And if you're only listening to this, by the way, and not watching on YouTube, he does not look 49. I don't know how old you are, but you look in your early 40s or 30, late 30s.
Hey, I'll take that. Yeah. Well, to be fair, like I couldn't legitimately grow anything like a beard until about 30. So I'm physically behind the power curve like that, but it's all working out at this point in my life. So I'm a father of four. I've been married to Emily for, Elijah's 17, so I think we celebrated our 18th anniversary this January. I do have one older daughter from a previous marriage. My wife went to be with Jesus when my daughter was 3 years old. I think I was about 28 years old. So I was married 6.5 years, and then now I've been married 18 years. So we've been raising a blended family from day one. So Emily adopted my oldest daughter, Brooklyn. Then we have two boys together. And then we adopted a little girl out of foster care. So there's currently three in the house, all teenagers. And then I'm a full-time family and student pastor in South Florida. So I run our youth ministry, oversee other stuff, and then kind of got into the podcast world probably 7-8 years ago. Really, the first intention was to minister to the moms and dads in our church because I realized like I'm a lot better youth pastor if there's a spiritually engaged mom and dad. So, and podcasting was just a way to get into their ears and kind of help with marriage and parenting stuff. So that's kind of broad picture for fun. I like playing basketball. I make pens. So I already have my old man hobby. I make pens on a wood lathe. Yeah.
I saw that on your website. So like pens, that you write with.
Yeah. Yeah. So
do you have one you can show me? I was actually curious. I've never seen someone's bio that says I make pens. So for those of you that are watching on YouTube, you'll get to see this. But
all right, yeah. So that's like out of a hybrid. That's actually a wooden blank that has been dyed with ink, like injected with ink, and then I turn it down from a block and then assemble it. And then this is like a really cool one. It's like a burled piece of wood, and it's
It seems
okay. Yeah, yeah. I forgot. Right. And then it's actually a fountain pen.
So, are they all fountain?
Yeah. No. Most are just ink pens. I have a few pencils that I make. This is like a full promo advertisement here. Basically, there's an old guy.
What does it look like to make pens?
It's really fun. It's therapeutic. So like at this point I have all of the equipment in my garage and, from start to finish, hour and a half, something like that, I can go from all like pieces to turning and assembling and finishing a really nice pen. And so, you know, when you're in the middle of raising kids and have a ministry job, it's nice to have something that gets done. And, these get done. And then I end up giving most of them away as gifts. But, this past year I realized, gosh, this is starting to feel like fishing, where like my hobby is going to make me broke. So like I threw up a little Etsy store, and I try to, like, if I can sell one pen for every two or three I give away, my wife will stay happy and quiet. And so that's the deal.
Well, I'm not going to promise I won't be asking for one as a gift.
Sure. All right.
they look really cool. I know exactly what you're talking about there. I've done some woodworking in the past, and I really love working with wood, and there is something really, spiritually and mentally therapeutic about finishing a project.
Yes.
With writing books, and you may get to the end of like writing a book, so you get a product, you get the book in hand, but then we got to sell it. And
right. Yeah.
And that's like a never ending, you know, circle of just trying to figure out marketing and then everything, like raising kids doesn't ever end. Marriage doesn't ever end. Like it's always a work in progress. And so that's cool that you have that little project that. So,
man, I recommend turning pens to
turning pens.
Anybody that wants something finished in their life. So.
Yeah. I've had friends that, you know, make some handmade knives.
That'd be cool too.
Yeah. There's something. There's probably something to be said about it. You know, just as men wanting to work with our hands, wanting to build something, create something that there's art in it involved. There's technique and all of the things that are involved in creating a product that works.
Yeah.
And it's a pretty cool thing. And those pens are beautiful.
Thank you.
I love wood. So I love working with wood. Thanks for sharing that.
Sure.
So what's your Etsy called?
I don't know. Turnings and Burnings, I think, or something like that.
Turnings and Burnings.
Yeah. It's actually pretty neat. So in our youth ministry, with our seniors each year, our graduating seniors, we do this rite of passage family fellowship where, so the seniors who are willing to do it, we have a big kind of church dinner dessert thing. They each ask an adult mentor to speak into their life. And we've spent years teaching them on identity, manhood, and womanhood. And so we have this night where they come up and each of them has an adult mentor that spends like 5 to 7 minutes speaking into their life of, these are the qualities of manhood or womanhood I see in you. This is my charge for you going forward. And then we bring them all down and lay hands on them and pray over them and say, we are now looking at you as adult members of our church. Like, no longer are you kids. Welcome to the adult club. There are absolutely no privileges. It's just responsibility. But you're one of us now. And so in that, I'll write a personal letter to each of them. But this year, kind of as a neat, fun aside, I made them all pens, about this size, but they were like a solid wood, and I bought a laser engraver and put each of their names on each. So that's the Burnings part. 'Cause now I can engrave names,
laser engraving.
Yeah.
You brought up rite of passage passage to adulthood. Let's talk about that for a second, because that is something that I've seen it and done in various ways over the last handful of years. Because like, I'm not there yet. I'm getting very close. My oldest is 12. He's turning 13 this year. My first teenager in our house is happening this year, which blows my mind. But I have some other friends that have, they're, you know, a couple years ahead of me, and they've had kids, you know, that they've done their own various versions of, you know, rites of passage or, you know, introduction to manhood type thing. But It's something we don't have really in our culture now.
No, no.
And it even worse so, what are they considering? Like adulthood, it's no longer like 18 anymore. It's like,
no, it's you're so not delayed.
Really ready to launch yeah. until you're in your mid 20s.
Right.
You know, even, you know, early 30s. And it's most men are mostly boys. They're not growing up. So what is our responsibility in the church? Like you, not every church has this. What you just talked about of inviting these young men, what are their ages?
Is it? So there's senior year. So they're 17, 18 years old.
Gotcha.
And I have tried to open it up to like, look, if you weren't ready this year and you want to do it next year, I would happily do somebody who's 19 or 20 or 21 years old, because I think it's so important. You just have to have the first one willing to break the mold and say, hey, I miss this and I still want to do it. Yeah. But it kind of started, I was at a church in Nashville that did something like this. And then it's just evolved from there. So I've been down here in South Florida at Covenant Fellowship Baptist Church for 17 years. We started here, my son, when my wife was pregnant with my son. And just in researching, Aaron, realizing that most cultures historically had some point where they, first off, adolescence did not exist. So like the teenage years, like adolescence was invented basically, you know, after World War I or World War II to sell things to a new group of people. But there was always in just about every culture that you can find around the world, a time where they stopped looking at you as a child and started looking at you as an adult member of the tribe, whatever the tribe meant. And so this is one of the things every year we spend some time teaching in student ministry and about what is a real man, what is a real woman. And I'll a lot of times use some of these references, and they're pretty wild, like everything from like the Hamar cow jumping, I think in Ethiopia, where it's like you have to jump over 5 cows. And, you know, once you hit the other side, you're good. There's this one in South America that's like horrendous. It's these bullet ants, which supposedly have the most venomous bite of any insect in the world. And they make gloves and they stitch the ants into the gloves where their biting side is like on the interior of their glove. You have to put your hands in and then like wear the gloves for 15 minutes or 30 minutes as these ants are stinging you and you're hallucinating and passing out. And then I think you have to do that like 5 times. But once you do, you are now a man in their culture, and you kind of know you have what it takes because you just endured this. So you have this all over the world. And then you have in the United States, what? You get your driver's license, or you have a sweet 16 party, or okay, you're 18. Congratulations. You can buy lottery tickets and tobacco, or you're 21. Now you can buy beer. This makes you a man, or this makes you a woman. And so we thought, okay, if culture's not doing it, then how can we do it? Because we are a culture. We're a city within a city. And so our methodology is like for my, what we encourage parents to do, and some do, some don't. Like what I did is when my son hit about 12 years old, I had another group of dads and we took them away on a fishing trip. I think we had 4 or 5 boys and we just had an awesome time fishing. And in the evening, we would sit and just talk about the biblical qualities of manhood. And so I use Robert Lewis's from Men's Fraternity, a real man, R-E-A-L. A real man rejects passivity, expects God's greater reward, accepts responsibility, and leads courageously. Mm-hmm. And then we made up within the women who were leaders in our youth group. I couldn't find a corresponding female one, so we made it up. And so a real woman rejects worldly identity, expects God's greater reward, acts with strength and wisdom, and loves others boldly. And so every year, we'll take a time in youth ministry and we'll teach, first off, identity from Genesis 1:27, that like we are made in the image of God, and that's our core identity. But then identity as a man and a woman are not based on how macho you are or how big you are or something like that. The godly characteristics of identity are the things that we just mentioned. And we talk about how like it's important for ladies to be able to identify this in men, because you want to run from boys and you want to ultimately end up with a man. And the same thing for men, that you want to run from some girl who's getting all of her identity by her body or by her, you know, job position or something
like
that.
Or from who she's dating.
Exactly.
Hey, friends. Aaron Smith here. Just wanted to take a moment and share with you something really special. You know, as parents, we're always looking for ways to encourage our kids' faith journey. Recently, I picked up some amazing highlighters and Bible resources from Mr. Penn as a gift for my daughter. She's been diving deeper into scripture and wanting to highlight her favorite verses and passages and wanting to jot down notes. She absolutely loves them, and they don't bleed through those thin Bible pages. Mr. Penn is all about equipping Christian families with top-notch Bible journaling kits, beautiful journaling Bibles, no bleed pens and highlighters, Bible tabs, journals, and even school supplies for us parents. Started by Christian teachers in Louisiana, they've got over 100,000 five-star reviews on Amazon, which is amazing. I love how their products make studying God's Word fun and practical. And they even offer custom options for churches and conferences, plus a money-back guarantee if you're not thrilled. It's something I really love about them. Shop the best Bible journaling supplies on the market and fantastic gifts for the ladies in your life at MrPen.com. That's MRPEN.com. And guess what? Our audience gets a special discount. Use code MAG10, that's MAG10, at checkout and get 10% off your entire order. Check them out today.
Yeah. And so on the guy side, I started with my boys when they were like three, and I had a friend who said this and I just picked it up. You're a man. That means God made you strong to take care of other people. And it's like, that is everything in the world that like I want to teach about manhood. First off, you are a man. Like, I want to affirm that in you now. You might be a really little one, but you are a man. You know, if you don't think you are, check your drawers. It'll help prove that you are.
Yeah.
And being a man, that means that God made you strong for a reason. It's not for yourself, it's for others. And so a real man uses their strength to take care of other people, and a boy uses their strength for themselves to get things from other people. And so, you know, I use this as kind of like a disciplinary conversation, not a spanking conversation, but with my boys as they were growing up. Hey, are you using your strength to take care of your brother or your sister? And so that all comes to a head their senior year when we do this rite of... So over the course of their senior year, we try to have every one of our seniors who are going to participate take part by having one of our youth times where they give their full testimony. So like 15 to 20 minutes written out, and then kids get asked questions for 15 to 20 minutes. And I have them give it to me beforehand, so I make it PG and we don't go. And it's also like, try to help them. This is the story of Jesus in you. This is not all of the bad things that you've done in your life. And so they have to do that public sharing of who they are in Christ. And then we have this ceremony that we do together. And I encourage moms and dads to also add in a couple of other pieces. One is kind of an extended family and friend dinner. That's more than just a grad party. It's kind of a dinner where everybody there speaks some kind of word of encouragement into that young man or young woman. And then if you can get some kind of memento to give them, like, you know, for instance, if you could make a pen or a knife or something, not like an iPhone, not something that's disposable, but something that marks the occasion. And what's really neat is I've had so many of the kids who've walked through this who said, like, I just really didn't understand it until we did it. But that was one of the most special nights of my life of like, when do you get the church laying hands on you and praying for you? When do you get this group of adults saying, I believe in you? And so that's kind of, I don't know how we got on that subject, but it's a great subject. And that's kind of the big picture of how we do it.
Yeah. Well, you brought up the pens and the rite of passage.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's a good conversation to have. I think parents, all parents, Christian parents specifically, are constantly wondering, like, well, what does this look like? And like you said, we have these really, you know, meaningless, you know, points in time, like, oh, you're 16, you're 18, you're 21, you know, and we're looking forward to those dates for very fleshly reasons.
Right. Yeah.
Not, I'm being incorporated into the community. I'm not now being looked at as a man that has a responsibility in the church, in my home, in this world, in my city. And it's something that is, I feel like it's definitely designed. I don't want to say there's like one person that had this plan, but like, I think the enemy has definitely influenced this design of removing these these points. You know, you look in the Old Testament and the fathers would lay the hands on their sons and give blessings to them. And that was like, hey, now I'm passing on the responsibility to you. Like you are now seen as, you know, in our home, a patriarch. You are now a man in our family. And we don't have that. We don't have that. And so my question is, you gave some tips on how you kind of incorporated it as a father in your own home, but as a father myself and my wife as a mother and in our home, how can we build that in now, showing them, like you gave that example of like, you know, God made, you're a man and he made you strong to protect. That's something that I bring up with one of my sons that kind of uses his, you know, strength sometimes in a wrong way. And I talk to him and I say, hey, you know, God made you strong so you could protect people, not so you can hurt them. You know, your strength is meant to help people, not harm them. But that's just one piece of the puzzle. What are some ways that you incorporate that in your home? You have some adults that you've already launched off, and you have some that are about to be launched off. And what can we be doing? Our listeners are probably like, how do I help my son?
I wish I could, you know, bullet it out perfectly, but I just think of things. I'll just tell you things that I feel like have been impactful. Even if I necessarily set out to do these, but as I look back, one has really been my collection of friends, having other men who are, spiritually aligned like me, but don't look like me and act like me, so that my boys get different examples of what a godly man looks like. Like, I really hope that they look at me and see that I'm a godly man and a good husband. But you know, wiring, my two boys aren't exactly like me. You know, they have traits of mine, but they're not exactly like me. And I want them to see, guys that just kind of are wired completely different than me, but love Jesus. And so I do think that one of them is that. Another is, I feel this conviction that dad needs to be the first repenter in the house. And so I need to model, humbling myself and apologizing to my wife, to my kids, and not making excuses when I do, not be like, well, you did this and I blew my top, so I'm sorry for blowing my top. Just, I blew my top and I was wrong. I didn't handle it right. Please forgive me. Like, asking forgiveness, from them, I think more than anything I could teach, you know, I could, like, I teach lessons on forgiveness, but they don't remember. I don't even remember what I say when I teach.
But they remember seeing.
Yeah. I remember when people apologize to me, like that means something. And so it's going to mean something when somebody of power and authority humbles themselves to apologize. I do think, Aaron, it was really formative about the age that your son is, that 12, 13 year old age, to kind of start that manhood, official manhood journey process, and to make it fun. You know, we did that. And then I did a separate, like, passport to purity trip with each of my boys. One of them loved every part of it except the sex talk part. And then the other was kind of like, you know, cool with all of it and had questions and everything. But one of them, like, buried their head in a pillow and just did not want to look at me or talk to me. And we had it, like, on a CD. So, like, we're driving to go watch a football game or something, you know, loved every part of it except the whole kind of point of the weekend. But I think that, like, early teenage, preteen, somewhere around in there, where, like, you get on the front end of introducing some of this sex and sexuality talk to them. But we did the manhood getaway separate than any kind of sex talk. And it was really cool to do it with a couple other people.
I feel like that nowadays the sex talk, it's like it has to happen earlier and earlier. And I'm stressing about it because I'm like, all of the things I need to bring up,
it's like, violating. Yeah.
Oh, I hate it.
There is, like, a pretty incredible resource. There's a pretty incredible resource. I think it's put out by Proven Ministries called The Sex Talk. And it's actually kind of a subscription-based thing. We subscribe to it for our church, for our members to access. And it's actually from, like, preschool through they're engaged to be married, coaching you on how to have the conversations of, like, okay, at this age and stage, what are the different conversations that need to be had? So it's really well done. Like, some of it's in like YouTube teaching. There's, I think, a podcast that goes with each one. But
I'm looking at it right now. I feel like I've seen this before. I feel like maybe they reached out to me. Maybe. I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah. But it's been good. But yeah, you're right. It's not like one talk's going to master it. And the funniest thing in the world is like, just talk to your 12-year-old and you can get them to commit to be pure until the day they're married, because that stuff sounds so abhorrent to them. But then realizing like the futility of 12-year-old commitments once those hormones start raging.
Oh, yeah.
And they're, you know, yep. 2 years later, 3 years later.
So you brought up the men you have around you. Mm-hmm. So your relationships, your yep. community, your fellowship, yep. which is, mm-hmm. I mean, it's biblical, where right. the Bible tells us, you know, bad company corrupts good morals. Like when you have the wrong people around you, you're going to have mm-hmm. the wrong influence. Having the right people, having other men that our children can look up to, other women also on the flip side of that, that our daughters can look up to, on what it looks like to be a godly woman, godly man. Mm-hmm. And this is actually a big one for probably many of the men that listen to my show. I just know men have a hard time keeping close relationships, being open, mm-hmm. being transparent, and how necessary it is that we cannot trust that our own example is good enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because it's not going to be. Now, we are the most influential person in our sons' lives, but having other believers, like how can we expect our sons to grow up and have good people around them and walk with other men if we don't know how to do it ourselves, if we can't open up and be honest and transparent and have men in our lives that speak into our lives and tell us when we're being, you know, dummies,
right?
And then I love that you also, that second part of showing an example to your kids of being the first repenter, knowing how to apologize. That's something that's very difficult. Very difficult to humble yourself and do that in front of your kids. But there's been so many times I've had to go to my kids and apologize to them. I'm like, I wasn't very nice. And I snapped at you and you didn't deserve that. All you were doing was asking. Or so many times I have to do that. And then also having to, you know, repent to them about when me and my wife aren't, you know, aligned, when we, you know, didn't communicate well with each other. We were bad examples, and having to, we both usually like we get in the car and we're driving somewhere. We'll be like, hey, earlier this happened. We're so sorry. We shouldn't have done that. This isn't right. We love each other. Yeah. You know?
Yeah. And by the way, I also think the importance of pursuing your wife as formation of manhood and womanhood of the other kids mm-hmm. in your home. Like we say we have a date night every week, and that's our aspirational goal. And we get somewhat near. It's a little bit easier right now than it is once school starts and the sports season starts. It's also easier when you're not paying for babysitting and then going out to pay for something to do. And it's like, I need a mortgage just to go on a date. But you got to get creative on those things. Like,
yeah,
you know, you can swap out with other friends. There's a lot of things. But I mean, our kids know that dad and mom are going on a date, like that's happening.
We like each other.
Yeah. Like I want them to think that, like, you know, marriage is fun, and that like marriage is enjoyable, and that it's not some drudgery or chore. So again, and then every once in a while, like, you know, you vocalize what you're trying to do and just be like, hey, I want you guys to see, like, dad makes it a priority to date mom, and one day you're going to be a husband. And I expect that you're going to make that a priority too.
Well, I think that just to add to what you're saying, the creativity part is, you know, because things are expensive and having to pay a babysitter. And it's why my wife and I haven't had a consistent date night in a long time, because we've been in the heavy lifting season of six littles. And
oh my, six.
Yeah. But there's things that we do. Like there's times when, you know, we have a hot tub and like, hey, you know, me and mommy, we're going to go spend some time in the hot tub. And they're like, oh, we want to go. We're like, no, it's just us. And they're like, okay. And so they get the whole separate thing, and they see that we're wanting to be alone, wanting to enjoy each other's company, wanting time apart. So they see that. And so that's a free thing.
Yeah. And I think that's really, like, it's helpful to bring up, like, dating is not some biblical mandate. I can't look in the Bible and look at all the times that like Abraham took Sarah out on a date or something like that, or that Paul commanded it.
Yeah.
It's a cultural thing. It's a way to show love, but I think it's that intentional pursuit of time. And if you have the ability and the means to get out, great. But if not, like, you use the lock on your door, you block out that time. And we were in a season like that. You know, when we had three littles, we didn't have six, but we had three littles in the house. And there's been a couple other major times where, I have a son who had leukemia. And so he got diagnosed with leukemia at 5 years old. We went through 3.5 years of treatment, had some good years, and then he relapsed as an eighth grader. And so then we went through another year and a half. And by God's grace, he's doing amazing. His brother was a perfect sibling match. So once the relapse hips happened, we got a bone marrow transplant, and he's been perfect ever since. Mm. But with all of that, I mean, there were times where it's like, you know, we can't go out. Or we go out and he spikes a fever and now I'm in the hospital and now I have PTSD about going out because, you know, the last time I went out, I ended up separated from my family for 5 days. But it's like, okay, so you make time in your neighborhood, you intentionally make time for your spouse and you make sure your kids know, like, it's not hidden time. It's everybody knows that mom and dad get time together.
And we like each other and we want that time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Another little thing that we do is, so my wife loves to garden, mm-hmm. and one of her favorite things is just to go look at the garden. And so I'll be like, hey, you want to go look at the garden? And she'll be like, yes. And so we tell the kids like, hey, we're going to be out back, you know, walk. And we're walking around just us, or we're watering them together. So there's lots of little things that we get to do that the kids see that we're just want to be with each other. Sweet. Going, you know, doing some really small, but probably big to them, you think.
How big a garden do you have?
So in the backyard, she's just got a bunch of flowers and plants and little trees. I love gardening too. I love like landscaping. So we have an acre that we've been landscaping over the last handful of years. So yeah, I just got, what's it called? Decomposed granite that we're going to be making a little pathway. I'm going to do it myself. Huh. And so if you came inside, it's hard to describe, but like just the grass and the plants and all the things. We love all of that. So we'll just go walk around the backyard. Although mosquitoes have been super bad this year. So we go out there and it doesn't matter what time of the day is, you're just getting attacked. And it's like, crazy. It's never been like this before. And it's making me miserable, but
interesting.
Yeah. So yeah, we both love gardening and it is a fun little thing that we get to do almost every day, just to go out and walk around with each other and do some watering or talk about what we want to do next. So that's a fun little thing.
Sweet.
Yeah. So I want to keep talking about this manhood thing. This is in womanhood, actually. I think it's a detriment to our society. People getting married much later or not getting married at all, staying with their parents longer and longer. I just was reminded, I forgot that the government did this years ago, that you were able to stay on your parents' insurance until you're 26.
Yeah.
And that just boggles my mind. It boggles my mind. And so there's some younger couples that we had in our church, and they were just talking about how they were on their parents' insurance until they're 26. And I forgot about that. And I was like, I mean, because I'm 41, so it's been a while since I've been on someone else's insurance. And I was like, oh my gosh, I cannot believe that's a real thing. But how emasculating is that? Not just that, but almost every aspect of society just making you never feel like an adult. Never making you feel like you have agency and responsibility, especially just in the criminal justice system with all the laws and how everything is working. Everything is going against, you're not capable. You're not good enough. You're not a man. You're not a woman. And so live like it. Have games. The something I recently heard is that the toy market just in general is like higher than it ever has been in history, just sales on toys. And the highest demographic that buys toys is adults, not adults getting it for their kids, adults getting it for themselves.
Yeah. Well, there's whole Lego lines for adults now. And Legos are fun. Like I love building them with my kids, and now I don't really want to build Legos anymore.
My wife has a little minifigure Lego set. I mean, a collection, because she loves collecting things, but it just shows that there's this lack of, and I don't think it's a lack of desire. Maybe it turns into that, but there's been this lack of men raising up men, fathers pushing their children. Like I just think about the bird, you know, scenario in the nest. They push their young out to get them to go fly. And we're all afraid to do that. We're all afraid to tell our kids that, no, you can no longer act like a child anymore. You're a man now. Yeah. You're a woman now. Let's behave that way.
Yeah. So let me throw something in there that's not a yeah, but it's an observation. So I've done quite a bit of mission trip stuff now to Central Asia, South Asia. And, you know, one of the things over there is you have the norm is a multi-generational home where it's three, sometimes even four generations living in the same home. And so, you know, on one hand, that means parents are expected that they're going to be taking care of their parents whenever, you know, they're in their older age. They're not all going to retirement homes. But it also means that quite often, you know, you have your children and you raise your children, but when you get married, you know, son brings his new bride in and they just have a room in the house. It was really like paradigm shifting for me growing up in just kind of the Western nuclear family mindset of like where I would consider that absolute failure. Like, oh my gosh, if I was like married and still living at home, that would be failure. But it's a lot of because of the way that we've constructed our whole culture and society, and we're just more affluent, right? So we have more money, we have more ability to spread out, we have a lot of space. But what I noticed in those multi-generational households is that there tended to always be a man available in the house, because even if dad, you know, middle generation was out working, there was a grandpa around to just be physically present for the kids. And just because son moves in and is married doesn't mean they're not there freeloading. Like they're working like crazy, but they've got built-in people to help watch their kids, and they're not sending their kids off to childcare and everything. But there's an expectation kind of all the way through that, like, we are a household for generations and we exist for the generations. Like, I'm not just raising you up to launch you out and be an independent person. You are a part of the family. And like, it's not that one day you're going to have a family, like you are a part of a family and you're going to get married and that's just going to be a bigger part of the family. But it's like, that's actually a much more biblical, that like when we read the Bible, that's how they were living largely. I don't have conclusions with it, Aaron, but it made me think, what is, you know, when you swim in a water, you don't realize that the water's tastes a certain way or is polluted or whatever. And it made me think, okay, what are some broken manhood, womanhood things in my culture just from the way that households are set up? And I do think that there's that real absence of the older generations in a lot. You know, we go away to see grandparents. And, you know, like my kids, one of their grandparents lives in town, and then one set of grandparents used to live next door, but they live in West Virginia, and they come stay with us for a bit. But it's just really interesting, like how much of that like long-term responsibility is not a natural part of our Western household that has kind of been the way of things. And then I think that does help break down society. Like, I think it ultimately goes to some of the stuff that you're talking about, where people are children way into adulthood. They don't take responsibility. They don't know they have what it takes. But it's because for a lot of them, it's like your ultimate goal in life is to take care of yourself. And it's like, that's not a biblical goal. You know, my ultimate goal in life is that I am a competent human being, not only able to take care of myself, but be a blessing to many other people. And I think that self-centered goal just really makes that fall short.
Yeah, I feel like in many ways, there's parts of society, parts of our culture that are rebelling against what we've seen over the last, you know, handful of 40, 50, 60 years, from the results of this, you know, perpetual boyhood. You know, there's families that are now, you know, building multi-generational homes. Like, this is a new level of quote unquote success, you know, like, oh, success isn't, you know, having your mansion. It's having a homestead and having your family, you know, your children and their children all have homes, you know, nearby. And so I see that there's a desire in culture. There's a desire in people to get back to more of how things used to be. Mm-hmm. You know, the cost of things, the way we've been told to raise our, you know, like you said, we need to be for ourselves, and we need to have a, you know, career, and our life needs to look a certain way, but it all is void of service. It's void of what is a Christian man, a godly man, how do they see the world?
Yeah.
How do they perceive their family? Not that, you know, our family should be the ultimate goal, is the only thing that we focus on. Mm-hmm. There's also that, I think that's a detriment in another level of all you focus on is the generations. All you focus on is your own, you know, core group. And then you don't have any outward focus of, you know, the fellowship with the brethren, you know, the right. other believers in your life,
yeah.
and having a care for them. But
yeah, Aaron, I think that's one of the other like subtle teaching things is, and this takes some real intentionality. As a believer who knows I'm supposed to be involved in ministry, that it's not a bunch of like, we're a bunch of people in a house that have our own silo ministries. Like dad's involved in youth ministry and mom's involved in women's ministry and kids go to kids ministry. But a really cool exercise to do in your house is to figure out, okay, what are we about? Like, what are the unique characteristics of our house and how can we serve Jesus together? And, you know, depending on the different stages of life you're in, like when you've got a bunch of littles, that's going to look one way. How it's looking in our house right now is actually pretty cool. We're serving the Lord together through my kids having their friends over. Like my son plays on a sports team and, you know, we're the house that they want to spend the night at. We're the house. And what do? We have dinner. We sit around the table. We pray. We ask them, you know, what were your highs and lows? What did you fail at this week? You know, and we want to like, even in that, normalize like failure is a part of life and you fail because you're trying, right? You know, if you're not failing, you probably didn't try anything hard enough. But you know, my daughter's got a friend who, being in our house is really special to her. Like there's something that she gets out of being in our house. But we also, when those friends are not there, we try to have some conversations about that and just help our kids see, hey, do you see that like your kid, your friends, like they're getting something when they're here. They're, you know, how many of them have moms and dads that are praying before they eat or are even having meals around the table or even married? And so that I think that like we are a team on ministry with Jesus together. You always want to have some element of that. And you also realize it's going to look different at every season of life that you're in.
Yeah. I love that. The idea of showing them the fruit of what they're doing, like, hey, this is it, which gives them then purpose and value of like, oh, we're not just having friends over. We're not just hanging out. Like we are being examples and representatives.
Yeah.
Whether we're having our friends over or going to this game or in the car with a friend, you know, we represent something and it is actually having an effect. So you made me think of something. My daughter loves to write letters and, you know, draw pictures. And she's just very outward focused. She's very, extroverted. I think she gets that from me, but she's even more so. She's like my mom. My mom is like uber extroverted. And, so my daughter's like, I want to, you know, we made some flower pots because we have all these gardens. And we went and sent a letter. This was a handful of months ago. We did it to a few neighbors, but we gave like a little vase of flowers and a little letter. And we gave that to a neighbor down the street. And we just saw the neighbor walking down and it was the husband. And we're like, hey, how's it going? He's like, oh, I'm doing okay. And then we just said, hey, how's your wife? And he was quiet. And he's like, you know, she passed away a couple months ago. And we're like, what? The wife that we gave the card to, we happened to give it to her on her birthday. We didn't know it was her birthday. And she was so touched by it. And she passed away like a few weeks after we gave it to her. Wow. Yeah. And just, we told that to our daughter and we were just so thankful that we were able to bless her. We had no idea. Yeah. We're just doing this one. She's like, I just want to make some flowers and give to our neighbors. And you just never know the influence that you're going to have in someone's life just by doing what you do. Yeah. You know, when you love God and you use the gifts that God's given you, like we didn't, it's not like we're like, hey, she's going to pass away soon. Let's bring her some flowers. We just randomly did it. She was so surprised, so taken aback, and thanked us for him. And it was her birthday. We didn't know that. And then she passed away a couple weeks later. Mm. And her husband was really touched by that. And so we don't know what kind of effect that had on him, but he was really emotional about it and thankful also. But it's a cool thing to be able to invite your children into what do we do? Like you were just talking about, what do we do as a family to show people the love of Christ in our homes, outside of our homes, in our neighborhoods? I think that's a really powerful thing that each one of us, all of you listening right now, just to consider that, like, what does your family do? How do you represent Christ in your neighbors' lives, in the community around you? Yep. It's a good question to ask.
Yeah. And it's typically not like I have to invent this whole new thing in my life. It's like these things are already present in my life. I just need to be intentional about them.
And that's really all it is. So that's what a marriage after God is. It's what just a life after God is. What has God given me, and how can I be a good steward of it? Yeah. So I love that. I think we, there's tons of stuff we can keep talking about with this idea of rites of passage and manhood. And but I'd love to know, what are some other issues you've been seeing? You're in youth ministry. Mm-hmm. Is it mainly high school, it sounds like?
No, middle school, high school, probably 50-50. And then I oversee our children's ministry, but don't have direct hands-on with that.
I could probably guess, but what are some of the prevailing issues you're seeing right now in the young people in our culture?
Yeah, I would say huge is identity. We've talked a lot about that, manhood and womanhood, but it goes more core than that. But I think that's huge. The other is anxiety. And so, you know, when we were little, if things were like really bad, you'd be like, I'm going to run away from home. That was kind of like you're throwing down that like Joker card or whatever of like, this is my wild card. Things are beyond my control, or I can't stand this anymore. We are in a generation now where their version of I'm going to run away from home is I'm going to kill myself. And they typically don't mean it, but, you know, sometimes they do. But even like verbalizing that, I went through plenty of loneliness and sadness and hard times growing up. But that idea of I'm going to kill myself was very foreign. And so in some ways that's been normalized, but it's just it's a symptom of this prevalent, super high anxiety that our kids are living in, and they are not living in the same world that you and I grew up in. There's actually a fantastic book. It's not a Christian book, but highly recommend to any parent reading, called Anxious Generation. And it's walking through the astronomical rise in anxiety and anxiety-based mental disorders that are happening in our young adults. And they are absolutely correlated with the invention of the iPhone, then with the invention of social media, and then the invention of the like button on the social media things. And that was kind of the real steep marker, because now all of a sudden I have instantaneous feedback all of the time on what people think about me. So this anxiety, you know, when we were young, if people got together for something, maybe you heard about it, maybe you didn't. Now you see every intimate detail of it. If somebody said something bad about you, then those, you know, a few limited people heard it. Now it's broadcast for everybody. If something bad happened on the other side of the world, maybe you saw it in the newspaper the next day, or maybe you happen to be home for the 6:30 evening world news, but probably not, right? Because, you know, what kid sits and reads the newspaper? Now you hear about every bad, like all of our kids know that there's a war in Russia and Ukraine. All of our kids know that there's this conflict in Israel and Gaza. They know about the floods that just happened in Texas. They know about every major conflict happening in the world. and they can't do anything about it. And so there's this baseline level of anxiety of just living in our culture. And that's on top of, you know, if you don't go to college, then, you know, you're going to be a destitute bum, except college costs four times what it did for your mom and dad.
And then you'll never be able to pay that off, and you'll never be able to get a job, and you'll never be able to buy a house.
Right. Right. So there are, like, when this kind of initially started, I just used to think, well, maybe they're weak. You know, maybe we just have a weak generation, but I'm actually really impressed with this generation. I Gen Alpha is, I really admire them. And I see a lot of go-getters. I see a lot of very creative, inventive kids. You know, one of the cool things about YouTube is they can learn anything. And I have kids that are masters of things that I would have never even dreamed how to get into. A lot more entrepreneurs, but then a lot more very stuck kids afraid of taking risks. And so, you know, one of the anxious generation prescriptions was that parents need to be far less restrictive of their kids in the physical world and far more restrictive in the digital world, because that, like, that was a direct correlation to anxiety and being stuck. Like, we need to let our kids learn to be brave in the real world, and we need to not give them such quick access to the whole world through their phones. But that's a major, major trend.
It makes sense. So you were talking about anxiety and being able to, someone, you make a mistake and it could have been a one-time thing. You could have said it out of whatever. And then all of a sudden someone recorded it and posted it. And then you're branded, you know, by this video that goes viral randomly. I get these notifications on my phone. Have you ever heard of Nextdoor? It's an app for
your
neighborhood. Okay. It's
pretty neighborhood spy app. Like,
It's a pretty neat thing because it's so local. It's literally it is your neighbors all together.
Yeah.
And so, like, I post, like, I'm looking for someone to do plumbing, and you get five people like, oh, I use this guy, and the guy lives around the corner. So
that's great.
It's hugely valuable. But then it's used for another thing. Someone snaps a photo of someone driving too fast down our road and posts it and says, this, you know, jerk is going too fast. The first thing I think is, like, you can't tell how fast he's going in the photo.
Right. This
person, and then every comment is like, oh yeah, we hate it when people go, and you see this person's truck, you know exactly who you're going to see it, and they know that they live in the area. And so every time I get a notification, I'm like, oh great. Did someone take a picture of me driving a little too fast? It's never my car, thank God. But one of these days it's going to be. And I have this anxiety constantly of, like, it doesn't overwhelm me, but when I see it, I'm like, I wonder if they just posted about me.
That's funny.
Because they're in my neighborhood and they know I live here. But that is a major issue. And on top of that, I think it was Sam Altman, one of the founders of OpenAI.
Yeah.
I think he was on a podcast and he said that he was the inventor of the infinite scroll, or he knew the person that was invented infinite scroll.
Bad guy.
I might be wrong on this. So if someone, like, is going to fact check me, that's fine. But I'm pretty sure he either said he was the one who did, or someone that was with him did. But they said that they regretted inventing it, because what it does is it the reason that social media is so addictive is because of that dopamine hit. It's not just the like button. The like button was a huge, like what you just said. Mm-hmm. You get that like, and every time it ticks up, your dopamine kicks off, and you're like, oh, am I going to get another one? Am I going to get another one? The same thing with the infinite scroll. You're like, what's next? Oh, there's going to be something else. Oh, there's going to be something else. And it never fulfills anything, ever.
Right. And the other thing it's doing, because another way that this directly correlates to rises in anxiety is sleep deprivation. Because your body restores while you sleep. And I mean, I'm guilty of this. I'm awake at least 30 minutes longer each night because of my iPad. But with kids, if there's no regulation on it, they're just going to be on it, you know, until they fall off like a zombie.
Yeah. So you get this tactile feedback. So you slide your finger and, like, it's moving. Then you get a visual cue. You see these new things, and then you get, like, an audible, and there's audio involved. Mm-hmm. And then you have the blue light involved, which is, like, the worst kind of light. You can be just filtering it through your brain. And so you have this issue with dopamine. And then when that dopamine drops, because you don't actually get to the dopamine, when it's released, it's a preparation chemical. It's like, it's telling you that you're about to get a reward. It's not right. the reward, but you never get the reward. And so then when that dopamine drops, then anxieties and other things come out because you never got to that reward that you were anticipating chemically. Yeah. It's something that I've struggled with social media, is just that mm-hmm. addiction to social media. And I'm actively trying to distance myself and removing the apps from my phone. And it's a very difficult thing. Find myself wanting to go back to it, find myself logging in my computer. And I grew up when these things all were just now becoming a thing.
Right. Yeah. Our kids are intuitively wired for it. Like their brains are already, those neural pathways are, they're in their formation years.
You go to McDonald's and you order on an iPad. You go to the grocery store and you use the keypad. You go to, like, in school, they're giving computers and iPads. Mm-hmm. So it's like, this is how we do things now, is through these technologies.
So I wanted to mention one other teenage trend that I'm seeing, because I think this is encouraging, profound and encouraging. I am seeing an increased interest in spiritual things. And I also think that is translating to an increased interest in legitimate Christianity. Yeah. In our area here in South Florida, which is certainly not the Bible Belt, we're not Miami. We're not like, you get to Miami, West Palm, Fort Lauderdale. That's one of the most unchurched places in the United States. We're not quite that, but we're not Bible Belt whatsoever. But every youth minister that I associate with around here that's been at their church for more than a year or two is seeing like some of the highest numbers of kids coming that they've seen in years. And so in some of it, I think it's because like there's not as much middle ground. So, you know, I grew up in a cultural Christianity kind of environment. And now there's no cultural advantage for kids to be Christian. And so, you know, like if they are, they are. They love their church. Their church is their hub for getting to be with believers, and they're willing to put more into their faith in there. So we're seeing, it's really encouraging, in multiple public schools, some of our highest numbers of kids in Christian clubs, in our youth group, we're running far more than what we should, given the size church that we have. And it's not just our church. I'm seeing this in others around there. So that's a really encouraging trend. But that increase in spirituality is not just Christianity. It's an openness for everything. And so that's why, like, we need to be equipped and prepared and ready to invite them in.
You know, I did a quick AI search. The AI is another hole. In preparing for this conversation. And some of the topics that it came up with is, you know, why does God allow suffering and injustice? Which is, I think this has always been a question, but is a big one now. How can we be sure Christianity is true when there are so many religions? What does the Bible say about controversial issues like sexuality, morality? Who is God and how do I know I exist? Mm-hmm. Or how he exists? And then what's my purpose and how does faith shape my identity? Which you nailed a bunch of these just in the handful of things that you brought up. With everything that we're seeing, I don't think we were ever created to be able to handle all of the input.
No.
And if you go back to the Garden of Eden, it's perfect. It's literally how God designed it. Like, don't eat of the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Not that God wanted them to be ignorant, but he wanted them to get their truth and information from him, mm-hmm. not from, you know, their fleshly desires. And we have this world now that we live in, that we have access to more information than ever in history. We can, like you said, 100 years ago, you didn't know what was happening on the other side of the world until someone came over and wrote about it a week or two later, maybe, you know, or you never heard about it. But we now have access to everything. And I think it's overwhelming and it's defeating. And like you said, there's really nothing we can do about it. Like, you can't stop the flooding. And so we start blaming things. We start trying to find, like, it's the government's fault, or it's, you know, Israel's fault, or it's this war's fault, or it's God's fault, or it's my parents' fault. We're trying to find something to blame for everything that's going on. And I think that's another reason why what you're saying is so true, is there's a big resurgence of people searching out spiritual things, trying to find answers to all these things, mm-hmm. because there is no answer in the world.
Yeah.
You're not going to fix what's going on. That's a heavyweight for our kids. And it makes me really sad, actually.
Yeah, it is. But you can, it's kind of like, I had a counselor tell me one time that, you know, when we were talking about these questions of like, the more you hear about all these mass terrible things happening, and then you're asking God, how can you stand this? Like, how can you be good and allow all these things to happen? And she mentioned, you know, one of the things is we were designed to carry our troubles, not the troubles of the whole world. And when you start, like, God is designed, and he's not designed, like, God is capable of carrying the troubles of the whole world. Yeah. I am not. And when I began to do that, I'm kind of inserting myself into the place of God, and I can't handle it. And it also tends to do damage to my relationship with God, because
we're looking for people who have been blessed by this free podcast and our free daily marriage prayer emails, and who want to help be a blessing to others. Creating and hosting this podcast and sending out our daily emails do incur a financial cost. And we want to invite you to join our faithful patron team to help financially support these resources so that they can remain free for all who need them. Please join our patron team today and become one of the faithful financial supporters who desires to help bless thousands of marriages around the world. Your support will help us pay for the creation, hosting, and promotion of our podcast and daily emails. Thank you, and we hope to see you become a Marriage After God patron.
I can't fathom how he could handle it. And so, because, you know, if I was God, I would fix all of these things. And, you know, that's an unending rabbit hole. It's like, okay, would you fix them to the level where everybody's a robotic automaton? It's like, no, I would just fix the things that have hurt me and hurt the people around me.
Yeah.
So if you can get more local, life can still be really joyful. And mm-hmm. and that's kind of the really funny thing, is like, if my son Micah is 15, and I think sometime last year, we don't watch the evening news a lot, except when my parents are in town and then Fox News is on 24/7 and it's like, but I happen to come home and turn on the evening news, like the 6:30 world news. And Micah was coming through the kitchen and he stopped and he was just kind of transfixed for like 12, 13 minutes. And he's like, Dad, everything is so sad. And it's like, mm-hmm. yeah, it is. When you watch the news, everything is so sad. But if I didn't watch the news, my life is actually pretty happy. There are people hurting. There's, you know, people going through terrible stuff, but it's manageable and there's a lot of joy. But, you know, media makes their money on fear and anger. And, honestly, social media does as well. So the more you can limit those inputs in your life and in your kids' lives, probably the more joyful your life's going to be.
Oh, yeah. I can't help but think of that scripture. I think Jesus says it like in this parable of the wheat's growing with the tares. Mm-hmm. And they come and they say, who planted the tares? Because we planted good wheat. And the landowner's like, it was my enemy. Uh-huh. He must have planted these tares. And they're like, do you want us to go remove them? And he says, don't do that. He says that because if you do that, you might tear up the good wheat.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Instead,
he says, instead, let them grow up together. And when it comes harvest time, we'll separate it at harvest time. And based off of what you were just saying, of like, God's capable of handling it all. Mm-hmm. He knows the wheats and the tares. He knows the good and the bad. We're not good at that. We're not good at discerning the wheats from the tares all the time. Not like he is. We're not capable of even separating it. So like, there's something that we can see and be like, oh, that's a great evil. Mm-hmm. And it may not be. Like, we could be wrong in the way we're seeing the scenario just because of the way it's affected us. And I've had conversations with people in the past of, you know, like, oh, you know, how's God letting all this stuff happen? You know, why doesn't he just stop it? And if you were to actually go down to the variables of what it means to stop the bad thing, okay? Even if it's like one person, like, oh, okay. To stop that one bad thing, do you go back to before that person who did the bad thing was born? and stop it? Do you go back to before his mother was born? Mm-hmm. Or like at what point do you stop in the line of how do you make sure this bad thing never happened? Right. Again, I'm not God. God knows. And I love that the Bible tells us that he is omniscient, omnipotent. He's all powerful, all knowing. And he's very capable of knowing the truth. He knows, he has a perfect record, and he knows who are his. And the thing that leads us to repentance is his patience and kindness. We're not often very patient and very kind. So
there's this old theologian, J. Vernon McGee, that had a quote of something
love
like,
him.
This is God's universe and he has a plan. You may have a plan, but you don't have a universe.
Exactly. Like that.
I just need to get me a universe. I'll be better.
Yeah, I don't want one. That's the thing is that the older I get, I realize like I have too much. My universe is too big. I want less land, less things. Like there's too many things to deal with, too many bank accounts, too many bills, too many, you know, all the variables of life is exhausting. So, well, Jay, do you have anything else you'd want to end with? Just an encouragement. I know this was a little bit dreary at the end, but there's.
Oh, sorry.
I love that you ended with your excitement for this Gen Alpha and their desire for God. And I do see that. I see that that is often the fruit of despair. When there's so much at hand and there's no answers, we often run to the one who has answers. Yep. And so that's a,
I mean, I think my ultimate encouragement is like, man, Jesus is coming back. He is, he's closer now than he's ever been. And every dark thing that happens is just a reminder that, this darkness is going to end and he is going to make all things new. And so, I mean, we've walked through some hard family things over the last couple of years, even beyond the cancer stuff, and never been more ready for Jesus to come back. I do want to mention just because I do that Let's Parent on Purpose podcast, but also this past year I started a daily devotional podcast for teens and young adults. It's called Guided by Faith. It's about 6 minutes a day, Monday through Friday. And basically what I did was, you know, looked at the kids in my youth group. And it's like, what encouragement do they need each day? And so, you know, it's intentionally short so that teenagers will listen to it. And it's also marketed, you know, teens and young adults. But legitimately the content is for any believer. But if I say it's for anybody, teenagers won't listen. Guided by Faith, and it's also part of the Christian Parenting Podcast Network. I'm about a year into it, so kind of crazy, over 200 episodes already, but it's been fun to do. If we're in the school year, I'll kind of piece down what I'm teaching on youth and put it into like five little segments. But like in July, we spent the whole month just walking through Proverbs, a couple of, you know, each whatever day of the month was, we picked that chapter and did a couple verses from it. But that's just it's a short one. Probably anywhere you're driving, you could fit it in that short drive. And it's meant to be just kind of a daily dose of encouragement.
Awesome. Jay, I really appreciate your time. I do hope this was encouraging. It was encouraging for me. The world seems crazy, but God is good. And he knows what's going on and he's not surprised by anything. Mm-hmm. I just pray that all my listeners would see the mandate in their life to show their children who they are in Christ so that they have no doubts on their identity. Because that's a big thing. And also, I think the big takeaway also is we need to, what was that? I would say that quote again from the book. It's limit their access to technology.
So parents need to give their children more freedom in the physical world, because there's probably not a bad guy at the park ready to kidnap them. So give them more freedom to take risks and be brave in the physical world, and then limit their access to the digital world, especially before they hit mid high school. That's a lot of formative brain time in that elementary and middle school time.
Awesome. Jay, appreciate it. So people can find you at Let's Parent on Purpose podcast. And
yeah, letsparentonpurpose.com. Actually, kind of a neat way to connect. I do a weekly, kind of every other weekly newsletter called Things for Thursday. And I got a lot of resources that we've just made to give away. So if somebody wants that, they can just text the word things, T-H-I-N-G-S, to 66866. That's things to 66866. And it also tells them about the different podcast ministries that I have and stuff like that.
Awesome. Thank you so much for sharing that, brother. And I pray that you keep blessing those young men and women.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.